The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
Aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Saturday. It is also Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to all you lovers out there and those of you seeking other things. And if you have not already gotten your significant other something for Valentine's Day, ooh, are you in trouble? My lovely wife, Claire, found this rather interesting Valentine's Day card. We've all seen the cards that have got sound in them, where you open the card and it plays a music clip or a sound clip or something. This one, you actually record your own message. And I'd play it back for you, but I think it would violate several FCC rules and regulations. So just take my word for it. It was really, really kind of cool there. And thinking about the history of Valentine's Day and going back to St. Valentine's, who became famous for marrying people that he wasn't supposed to be marrying and that kind of thing. That little shape that we all call the Valentine's Day heart, and that's actually not true. The heart doesn't look like that. That shape is actually supposed to represent another portion of the anatomy, specifically female. But during a particularly prudish time in our history, they decided to say, oh, yeah, that's a heart, really. That's all that's supposed to be. Especially when they started marketing the cards to little kids and stuff like that in grade school and whatnot. I remember when I was a kid in grade school, you'd go out to the store and you'd buy this huge packet of these cards to give to everybody in your class, which I thought was dumb because most of the people in my class I didn't want to hang out with, let alone be Valentine's Day with. But, you know, they're getting us conditioned to buy cards and send them out and everything like this. And sometimes I'll make them. And I know I'm wandering on about a lot of personal anecdotal stuff, but it's a two-hour show, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. But I remember one Valentine's Day, I was separated from my lady love by quite a few time zones, and I was very unhappy. And I actually made her a card. I just got some construction paper and a coat hanger from the hotel I was staying at, wire coat hanger, and another piece of much thinner wire, and I don't even remember where I got that. And I literally put together this Valentine's shape, what we call the heart shape, out of wire using my Swiss Army knife and poked it into the card, and I put an envelope and I sent it to her, and she still has that. So, yeah, we're icky sweet romantics. I love my wife, and, you know, I'm not afraid for the world to know that. Anyway, a lot of stuff to cover today, and if you'd like to join us on the air, Matt is handling the phones today and twiddling the dials and flogging the giant mutant hamster. And the phone number, as always, is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. The webcam is actually working. We finally got the bugs out of that. And the sun is just coming up through that window over there over Pearl Harbor, and I've got a cup of fine Kona coffee here to keep me wired for the remainder of the show. Now, this is, unfortunately, this week has been kind of rough. The economy continues to dominate the news. Late last night, the bailout, the joint resolution, you know, where they worked out the compromise, passed with no GOP votes in the Senate. Broke right across party lines. Three GOP senators voted for it in the House. Most did not even read the whole bill before the vote. It was just, this is the other guy's bill, therefore I'm going to vote against it, and so forth and so on. Congressmen see, congressmen do. And the issue here, as I said last September, when it was Bush in the White House, it was patronage. The money is going to GOP donors, GOP activists, GOP business people. Now it's Obama in the White House, and it's patronage. The idea is to make the people in your party so rich that the other party cannot come back and compete with them. So that's the way this system is working, and that's what this huge trillion-dollar program is. There's a lot of patronage going on in there. You know, the money is going to favored cronies. It's certainly not going to any of us over there. And it does seem like, you know, I mean, we're hearing more stories about $2,000 hookers. I'm sorry, $2,000, we call them call girls. You know, hookers, the under 500, I guess. I don't know what the rules are, how they break that down. But we're hearing, again, bonuses with taxpayer money, parties, resorts with taxpayer money. They're taking our money to go to places that we ourselves could never even hope to see the inside of because we don't have that kind of money. Nancy Pelosi is screaming she wants a bigger jet because she's feeling she's much more important now because she can basically get the House of Representatives to do whatever they're told to do. And it does seem like even today, as much trouble as the nation is in, that vanity and greed rule Washington, D.C. Common good of the people, who the heck needs to worry about that? Now, as I said before, you know, they're throwing all this money into these patronage jobs or into these. They're basically giving it to the people who wrecked the economy in the first place. And I want you to think about something for just a minute. If the United States government took that same money that they're pouring onto the bankers who, and investment brokerages who created this mess, and they gave it back to us, the people, whose money it is anyway, okay, because we're on the hook for all this bailout stuff. If they had just printed that up and given it to us, each and every one of us would get about $30,000. $30,000. Now, what could you do with that? We could pay our mortgages. That would end the mortgage and foreclosure crisis. If we got $30,000 from the government, we could pay our credit cards. That would end the credit crisis. If we got $30,000 from the government, we could all start new small businesses. That would create jobs. 60% of all new job creation is through small businesses. That would end the unemployment crisis. Those new businesses could make products for export. That would end the trade imbalance and the downforce on the dollar. Why on earth are they not doing this? Or at the very least, slashing taxes by 50%, which would produce pretty much the same results. Instead, the government has taken $8 trillion from the people to give to the banks so the banks can loan it back to us at interest. And it is a stupid, stupid way of trying to solve the problem. I mean, if you walk down the street and you see a house on fire, is the best way to put that fire out to go around to the other houses and chop out big chunks of wood to throw on the house that's burning in the hopes that maybe you'll smother the flames? I don't think so. And yet that's exactly the approach they're taking to the economic meltdown. And I have to wonder, you know, are the wealthy people in this nation so greedy, so consumed with extracting that last bit of money that they're not going to release their hold on our throats just long enough for to stand back up again? I mean, we talked before about a new version of Jubilee where the government just says, okay, all the debts are wiped out. You know, we're going to let you off the hook for the national debt and we're all going to start from scratch again. In the long run, the banks, the Federal Reserve, they'd wind up making more money in the long run if they were to wipe out the debt now so that we could all stand up again and start moving forward. Instead, everything that you're seeing, the foreclosures, the loss of businesses, the loss of homes, is the result of the money being sucked into one giant pile in New York and Washington, D.C., in the financial centers. They've got 99% of the money is all piled up inside their little vaults where they roll around on it and have orgasms. And they're just trying to grab those last few coins from the populace. And everything that we're seeing, the homelessness, the unemployment, the hunger that has come to the United States, is because we're being told we have to make do with less so the government and their cronies and the financial institutions can have more. It's a stupid, stupid policy, and it is bringing about the end of this nation. And I have to wonder, is it just greed and stupidity, or is Alex Jones right and they're really doing this deliberately? I don't know. But I have to tell you, everything they're doing now is exactly the wrong thing to do because, yeah, they're going to create 3 million minimum wage jobs to go out and fill in the potholes. And once the potholes are filled in, we'll have spent the money. These people are still going to be out of work. They're not going to have any new skills that we can use to bring manufacturing back to this country, which is really what has to happen to save the economy. We have to be competitive in manufacturing around the world. That also means a tax cut, because one of the reasons manufacturing has gone to other countries is their more tax-friendly business environments. In our country, we make only a few things, and then we try and arrange it so that 5,000 people all make a living off the one little item we've manufactured. And that's what has priced us completely out of competition in the world. We're going to take a break here, 800-259-9231. Matt is answering the phones, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cat's Acadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. This segment, I want to talk about the ongoing torture scandal. And it is current for a couple of reasons. First of all, we are seeing more and more indications that, for the most part, Barack Obama is leaving intact the mechanisms for aggressive interrogation. That's the new politically correct term for taking a razor blade to the genitals of a possibly innocent prisoner. And, yes, they're closing Guantanamo, but only to move the prisoners and what is going on someplace where you won't see it. The rendition mechanism is pretty much being left intact, and that's a very alarming situation. There are various rights groups that are saying, you know, we need an investigation. There should be war crimes trials. We're finding out now that Donald Rumsfeld did, in fact, know at the time it was happening that his torturer's apprentices were torturing people to death. This is a serious crime. I mean, torture, just by itself, is illegal under U.S. law. It's certainly against the Constitution, prohibitions against cruel and unusual punishment. And, you know, I love the little weasel wording that they tried there. It says, well, no, torture doesn't violate the prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment because we're not really punishing these people. We don't know they've done anything wrong. Therefore, it's perfectly legal for us to rip pieces of skin off of them with the pliers. And as we have started to find out, the waterboarding was really just the least of it. There was a lot more serious stuff. Permanent crippling injuries have been done to some of these people. No wonder they don't want to let them go. It's a huge, huge embarrassment. 71% of Americans are in favor of a full investigation, you know, into what's been going on, according to a Gallup poll released this last week. 71% of Americans, you know, under the principles of democracy, that is a mandate to the government. So I wrote an open letter to President Obushma, or is that President Obey Me? I'm not sure. I haven't figured that out yet. And the letter said, basically, I do not know why you are shielding the war criminals, which sullied that office you now sit in. You are chief executive of a very angry nation, getting angrier by the minute as we lose our jobs, our businesses, and our homes. Now, to heck with anger management, we are seriously pissed off and looking for a target to take it out on. You cannot calm us down, nor can you control us. So it really comes down to a simple choice. Would you prefer the target of Americans' anger to be yourself or your predecessor? And think about it. And basically, it comes down to the concept of a safety valve. This nation is edging closer and closer to open rebellion. We are probably, seeing the media is refusing to report more and more of these incidents, like we had the protesters out in front of the mortgage lenders' CEOs' houses. We know for a fact for many years now that firebombings of IRS offices are automatically never reported by the media. So there could be a lot more going on, you know, that we're being distracted from while they bring up the Tylenol case and JonBenet Ramsey and all these other things from the past they're trying to use to fill up the media airwaves. So we're getting close to that boiling point. We're getting close to joining the riots that we've been seeing in Greece and Spain and France and Italy and Iceland. And you can't just contain all that pressure. There must be an escape mechanism. There must be a safety valve to prevent the whole boiler from exploding, to use an analogy from riverboats. And I think war crimes trials against the previous administration is that safety valve. Because we, the people, know it happened. It's not like you're going to convince the rest of the world that it was all a myth. We have seen the bodies. We have seen the blood. We've seen the photographs. We've seen the aftermath of it. It is a known fact of recent history that this happened. And America's reputation as standing for the rule of law and moral leadership demands that we do something about this. And I think having war crimes trials for those members of the Bush administration who were part and party to this abuse of power at the highest levels would go a great deal to direct the anger away from the current administration. Because as the economy continues to decline, and as it becomes more and more obvious that the current administration is clueless on how to fix this mess, they're going to be looking for a scapegoat. And I think the Bush administration is it. And I think they're very, very foolish to go on trying to protect those war criminals, because it only makes them look complicit and guilty. Anyway, more economic news, of course, we know the unemployment is continuing to skyrocket. Now we're seeing white-collar homelessness is what they're calling it, where white-collar workers, they've lost their homes. They invested with Bernie Madoff. They're now out on the streets and in the homeless shelters. When it starts hitting that upper level of society, then they're going to say, oh, wow, we really do have a problem, don't we? You know, very often the perceptions of the media and of history are filtered from the point of view of the elites. I mean, if you go back and you look at the French Revolution, which I have been doing a lot lately, I might add, and they call it the Reign of Terror. Well, it was a reign of terror because it was being directed against the political leaders and the bankers and the financial elites. The total number of people actually killed in the Reign of Terror, total number of people actually executed by the guillotine, was actually rather small. But it was important, and it was horrific because it was happening to the good people. It was happening to Marie Antoinette, and it was happening to Louis XVI. It doesn't matter when it's ordinary people like you and I getting killed or hurt or crippled in these wars and stuff. But, oh, my goodness, when it's happening to our royalty, then it's a crisis. Vladimir Putin went public the other day. And I love the irony of this. If you're my age, you'll appreciate this. Russia is warning the U.S. about the evils of socialism. You want to talk about being through the looking glass? Because when, you know, as a kid, you know, we were capitalists. And, you know, Russia, they were the socialists and they were the commies and they were evil and they were bad. But Putin is absolutely right. Following the collapse of the USSR, Russia's economy up until recently was doing very well because they'd adopted a balanced capitalist mode. They were operating free of decades of accumulated debt by the former government, and things were really cranking pretty well over there. Meanwhile, the U.S., we're already a fascist economy. And we know that because profits are kept private. If you make a bunch of money in your business, you get to put that in your pocket. Losses, though, are being socialized. That's what all these bailouts are. They go up to Wall Street, they roll the dice, and they say, oh, boxcars, or whatever they say. And they lose a bunch of money instead of having to fork it over themselves, they pass the hat among the people. And the losses are spread out over all of us to the tune so far of $30,000 apiece that we know of. And then they go back for another roll of the dice at Wall Street because what they win, they keep. And what they lose, they stick us with the bill. Who doesn't like that? And it's just a short step from fascism to socialism, and we're headed that direction, and Russia recognizes it. They've been there, and it's just amazing at this stage in my life to see such a reversal in roles. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got callers on the line. We're going to go first to Dave in California. Aloha, Dave. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Aloha, Michael. I wanted to tell you two things. One, I identify with your hamster running in place faster and faster, eating seeds and water and getting nowhere and watching everything crumble around me.
Seeds? Oh, my God. Oh, I think we made a mistake. No wonder he's getting so skinny. All right.
Oh. And
That's why we're undervolting. That's why we're not getting enough electricity out of that generator. My goodness.
Oh, maybe
anyway,
maybe we need to electrify his little wheel, you know, under his feet, make him run a little faster. That'll help.
There's a good idea. Certainly consistent with U.S. government policy regarding us.
Yeah, it'd fit right in there.
Okay.
And since we're having fun with names, how about these? Barack Obama?
Mm-hmm.
Barack
like
Yo
that.
Mama?
Nah, not so much.
Okay, and how about all these new programs that are being put in place by Mr. Obama to save us?
Mm-hmm.
Bureaucracies.
Ooh, I like that one. That's great, the bureaucracies.
Okay,
That's very clever. I like that.
Use them in good health, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for the call. And we're going to switch over to Patricia in Austin, Texas. Patricia, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, hello, my dear. I love you guys, and I want to thank you very, very much. You guys are like my shining star. And
happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart. I should be ashamed, but I'm one of the ones that are homeless. Well, we're semi-homeless. We live in a little RV in our van, but I listen to you every day, Alex Jones, and you people are one of the few people that care about our group. And here recently, I had my best friend stabbed 22 times in the woods, a homeless woman, and they didn't do very much to find the killer. They finally did, but as for me, I got sick out here, and they found something in my lungs, and I'm fighting to get medical care, and I'm calling you right now where we take showers. We don't have a place where but it's terrible out here. It's just so terrible, and all I do is keep my radio station on you guys, and I got a call on that Travis County that my mom died, and they're going to send me a little something, so I want to send you guys a big something, because you give me hope just to keep on going where there's no hope.
All right, well, listen, Patricia, let me, I've got two things to say, and the first is that, you know, thank you for your generous thought, but I think you better hang on to everything that you've got for your own use right now. And second of all, you said earlier in your commentary that you were feeling a little ashamed. That is absolutely wrong. You should not be ashamed, because you did nothing wrong to be where you are. You did not create this situation. It was created for you. And you shouldn't be embarrassed, and you shouldn't be ashamed. You should be angry. You should be enraged. Enraged is going to get you a lot further than feeling ashamed and embarrassed. And so, Patricia, if there's one thing that I can give you in this call that you take home with you today, back to your little RV that you're in, is that you are okay. You did not do anything to deserve your current circumstance. You are just caught up as part of the collateral damage in the rampant greed of our financial leadership and a government whose failed policies got us into this mess and who can't seem to realize that their current policies are only going to make it worse. So you've got nothing to be ashamed about, Patricia. You're a woman of courage, and you're handling the situation a lot better than a lot of other people probably would in the same circumstances, okay?
If it's any consolation to you, my husband and I have been sober in the 12-step group for 12 years and go to church, and it's hard. And we don't beg for money. We do what work we can. He is a disabled Vietnam veteran, and there's a place over here, I swear to God, I'll close with this. They promised us housing. And who got all the housing? The illegal aliens, and with their mamacitas, their babies, and their husband would use another name to go get work, and they get the housing, and there's so many homeless people out here that could work. And who got all this help? The illegal aliens. And I love you guys. I just want to know I'm going to keep on listening, and when I get my mom's inheritance, I am going to send you a donation, because you're my shining star. You just give me hope to keep on going. And I just leave it on your station. And it's just, you guys are just too good to be true. And anyway, keep us in prayer. I got my number down to take a shower over here. And at least I'm not under a bridge. And someday when I get on my feet, I want to sing you something. And just let people know how bad it is out here. that they find bodies. There was a guy, I'll start close with this, he had a heart problem. Well, they discharged him from the hospital. 3 days later, his body was found in the woods because he's homeless. No money, no insurance. And that's, this is America, but yet the aliens can get all kinds of medical care. It's just so wrong. But I love you guys. And I'm very weak because I'm sick, and keep me in your prayers. And when I get that inheritance, I do want to send you something. It's like my pastor's.
I'm going to ask you a favor, Patricia. When you get back on your feet, call into the show again and tell us how things are going and how you got back on your feet, because sharing that with the rest of our listeners who are in the same situation, that is going to be worth far more than a donation. When you get back on your feet, when you've got a roof over your head, call in and tell us how you did it, okay?
All right, listen, and say a prayer for my husband Alfred and me and our little dog Princess here. And you guys, I'm going to keep listening, and I love you guys, and you just give me inspiration to keep going, and I love you for that.
Well, thank you very much, Patricia. Thank you for the phone call, and we're going to let you go here because we're running out of time, and I know you've got to run on and get your turn in the showers and everything like that. But, you know, Patricia, like I said, never feel ashamed. Hold your head up proud. You are an American. You don't deserve what has happened to you. You didn't do anything. It was done to you, and you got to keep remembering that. And anger is going to get you a lot further than feeling embarrassed or ashamed. So thank you an awful lot for the phone call. And we're going to move on here a little bit. And, you know, we're seeing these horror stories. We were talking about, we've got one more call. We're going to try and sneak in before the commercial break. We're going to go to Larry in Ohio. Aloha, Larry. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't know what your topic of discussion was in the past because I don't have a radio and I wasn't listening, but I am very, very concerned, interested, basically horrified at what I'm seeing going on in the TV with this airplane crash and outside of Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I was doing some research on the internet the other day, and of course I remember from years ago, and it says that the crash of Flight 93. You remember crash of Flight 93?
Oh,
it went down in Pennsylvania.
Yes, on 9/11. I mean, there's so many of these suspicious crashes. I mean, there's Paul Wellstone, same exact circumstance. On the approach to the airport, just falls out of the sky. Same with JFK Jr. On the approach to the airport, just falls out of the sky. Same with Ron Brown. On the approach to the airport, just falls out of the sky. You know, it's like, is there nobody there creative who can come up with something new for these little assassinations? And I don't know for sure that this is an assassination, but I do have a lot of material about this flight. I do want to hold it into the second hour, though, because we want to pick up some additional affiliates there, and I want to talk about this plane crash during then. So if you can get to a radio in the next 20 minutes, please, or an internet connection, please do so. But yeah, we're watching this very, very closely, because the instant the media started saying, oh, it's got to be ice, it's got to be ice, it's got to be ice, I'm saying, oh, okay, the NTSB isn't even there yet, and they're already trying to tell us what we're supposed to believe about this.
Well, I find it interesting that Beverly Eckert was on there, and she was an advocate for the families in 9/11.
Oh,
and
she was more than that. She had branched out into finding out the truth about the torture situation, which would have threatened a lot of people, and I think that might be the motive. Larry, we got to let you go. We've got the music means it's time to take a break here. So we're going to stop. We're going to come back, finish up about the economy. Then when we go into hour two, we are going to be talking about the plane crash in Buffalo, Flight 3407. There are some oddities about it. We'll be right back. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of hour number one. We're going to talk about a few things here. We're going to take a news break. When we come back into hour two, we are going to be talking about Flight 3407 and some of the very odd aspects of this case and why people are justifiably somewhat suspicious that this may be another Wellstone, JFK Jr., Ron Brown kind of an incident going on here. I am already getting emails about Patricia's phone call here, and yeah, it's going to be staying with me for a while. We all know in the abstract that this kind of stuff is going on in our country right now under the mismanagement by the U.S. government. But Patricia's phone call put a voice, if not a face, on it. And I'm definitely going to be saving that phone call in my permanent archive here. And I remember back to this page of photos that we have from the Great Depression 1929, which we're probably on the verge of renaming the not-quite-so-Great Depression as we get a little bit further into the current one. And there's this photo of this woman with her kids in front of a tent in a shanty town, and just the look on her face of just dealing with today and they can't even think about anything else, just that trapped on the bottom level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And that image put a face on the pain of the Great Depression. And I think Patricia has just done the same thing for our current situation here. Now, the good news is, Patricia, if you're still listening, if you're done with your shower already, that woman that was in the photo from the Great Depression actually did get her life back together and got back into a house with her family and so forth and so on. So these things, they may seem like they're permanent. They really aren't. You know, the cycles swing back the other way, sometimes violently, and I think that's in the offing here, but nothing ever stays that bad for very long, because if there's one characteristic about the human nature, we don't like to be controlled, and we don't like to feel like we're being enslaved to somebody else's idea that the gods think they should live lives of minor deities at the expense of the rest of us. Speaking of that, in the economy, Israel, which is just going through these elections and is just doing this incredible right-wing shift, which bodes ill for peace in the Mideast, they apparently are on the edge of bankruptcy themselves. The Israeli government is on the edge of bankruptcy because of all the money they spent going into Gaza and Lebanon. And I think we're probably going to have a little bit of a contest guessing who it is they're going to expect to bail them out. And I've decided to mention this right now because of Pat's phone call, because if you look at the circumstance Pat is in, and the millions of Americans just in similar circumstances, why is our government giving any money at all to any foreign government when we have people homeless in this country? It just doesn't make any sense unless our government is, in fact, totally co-opted by Israel to the point where they will gladly sacrifice the lives of Americans starving to death in the cold of winter, freezing to death, so that they've got a few more dollars they can send to Israel to pay for white phosphorus to drop on school kids in Gaza. It just seems like the United States has become this incredible perversion of what was intended by the founding fathers. I'm not a religious person, but the word unholy comes to mind in watching the actions of our government right now. Speaking of unholy, and we've got a caller on the line, I'm going to get to you in just a minute here, but just one more thing I wanted to cover this hour. Apparently, our soldiers serving in the Mideast, serving in Iraq, serving in Afghanistan, we already know they were getting very cheap body armor that wasn't protecting them. They were getting Hummers that weren't armored. Now we're finding out that the simple expedient of earplugs were denied them. And these soldiers are coming home with serious and permanent hearing loss because the people running this war didn't want to cough up a few bucks to get everybody a set of ear protectors. And we're not talking just ordinary noise in a combat zone. We're talking shockwaves because the artillery and the bullets are whipping by faster than the speed of sound. They're laying out shockwaves. The shockwaves will travel down your ear canal, and they will hammer on your eardrum. If you go to a shooting range, everybody there has got ear protectors, because if you don't, you can lose your hearing permanently. And they're not giving this ear protection to our kids in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're coming home with permanent hearing loss. You want to talk about just not caring at all about the people who pay your taxes and fight your wars and build the nation under you. Really, you have to wonder at the mindset of our leadership. I think they really do see themselves as a separate species from the rest of us. And they certainly treat us that way. All right, we're going to go to the phones real quick. Sean in, I guess that's Minnesota.
Yes.
And what's on your mind today?
Oh, boy, do I have a lot on my mind.
Okay, well, you only got about 4 minutes, so go for it.
Okay, first question is, I've become recently very aware of the intentions, the bad intentions of some very small elite people. And I'm wondering, you know, I have two kids. Is there even a sanctuary, a country that you can go to? I mean, I've got mountain property, my parents live, but I live in the cities in Minnesota, and I don't even really want to be here in about probably 5 to 6 months when everything collapses.
I understand that. I hear that from a lot of people. We know that a lot of people are already leaving the United States for greener shores, and unfortunately, it tends to be our best and brightest, the people who do know how to do manufacturing. They've already left for other countries where their skills are treated with value and respect. You know, but it's hard to know where to go. I mean, for a while I was looking at Australia, but they've kind of gone real fascist in the...
Yeah, that's where I was looking at first as well.
Yeah, and I've been down there many, many years ago, and it was a very wonderful place, and I really liked the people. But it just seems like all of these allied Western governments are all going the same direction at the same time. And it does seem to be breaking down, when they talk about the clash of civilizations, it does seem to break down to a war between two different banking systems. There's the compound interest banking system that has been forced on us along with this debt-based monetary system called the Federal Reserve, which has led us to the edge of ruin.
Yes.
And then you've got what they call the Islamic banking system, which people are beginning to notice didn't get touched at all by this huge economic crash. Those countries are still doing very well. And I got to be very honest, after Putin's warning the U.S. about the dangers of socialism, I'm starting to wonder if Russia isn't someplace to start looking. Now, you know, I'm probably a little too old to be accepted in some other countries, even though I've got some very specialized skills in the film industry that they might find of value. But for younger people, yeah, it's not unrealistic. You know, and when things get really bad in this country, they're going to close the borders. I'll tell you that right now. They're
right.
Going to absolutely close the borders because they're not going to want to lose the skilled people that they're going to need. They're going to treat them like crap, but they're going to lock them in and keep them working.
Well, you know, I just want to interrupt real quick because I know you're short on time here. But from a religious standpoint, I've never been one to, be a staunch Christian that follows the Bible every day and does all, you know, the things that the Bible does. Although I have come much closer to the Word of God under these current situations, and I believe, and so does many other people. Worldministries.org is a website of a pastor that is warning the United States that in biblical, if you translate it to biblical and Revelation, everything is lining up for a second coming, and you know that's a fact.
Well, that's unfortunately one of the dangers that is complicating the current situation, because we have so many people in this country who are convinced that if they help start World War III, that, you know, Jesus is going to come down from the big house and invite them up for a party, you know, after it's all over. And this,
well, I don't think he's going to invite you up for a party. And I don't think
he's going to invite me up for a party anyway, because we're not on speaking terms. But no, but the point I'm making is that at a time when we should all be looking at finding ways back to peace, we have a large segment of our society that is supporting the push for war because of their belief that there's going to be this great heavenly revival in the aftermath. And I think that's a very dangerous situation. Anyway, the music means we're out of time. Sean, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to take a break here for some commercials, a little bit of news. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the crash of Flight 3407. We're going to be talking about the Australian bushfires, all kinds of stuff like that. So stick around. We'll be back in about, 6-7 minutes here. Until then, aloha, America. And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our Saturday Valentine's extravaganza. And a special shout-out to all of our affiliates who join us for the second hour. And we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. We're going to start off here with a story we covered earlier in the week because it's beginning to basically validate some of the comments I made. I'm talking about the collision of the American Iridium satellite with the old, apparently no longer active, Russian communications satellite that happened about 500 miles over Siberia. And there have been collisions before, but they were rather minor, sort of like ticking the end of an antenna and spinning things out. But this was full-on, head-to-head, just complete collision, and it created this huge cloud of debris. And when the report first came out, they said, oh, well, it's no big deal. The space station's not in danger and all the rest of that. And I said, no, that's completely wrong, because the problem when you have a crash between, like, say, two airplanes or two cars or two locomotives or whatever, the debris will fall to the ground, and at that point the incident is over. But in space, when you have a collision like this, all these pieces of the satellites, they just go off into new orbits. And some of these pieces of debris are too small to be tracked from the ground. And we're hearing now that the reason this collision happened in the first place is that NORAD, which is tasked with keeping track of where things are in orbit, simply was unable to keep track of them all. And they weren't keeping an eye on this Russian satellite, because most modern satellites, including the Iridiums, have a what's called station-keeping ability. They actually have rockets on board to slightly alter their orbits. Usually it's for maintaining the correct position within a constellation, which is what the Iridiums operate as. But obviously if somebody says, you know, this satellite is coming close to you, you might want to think about getting out of the way. You can do that. They just weren't watching. Head-on collision, both satellites were destroyed. So now we've got all this debris that is up there. And I said some of it would go into the atmosphere and burn up. Some would ricochet up very high, then come straight back down and come into the atmosphere somewhat later. But a lot of this, a huge amount of this plume, are going to go into these very eccentric orbits where they're highly elliptical. They're changing altitude all the time from just above the atmosphere to, you know, a considerable amount of altitude, which makes them very dangerous. And over the last few days, we've seen the authorities kind of acknowledge that, yeah, this is a real problem, that there is a risk to satellites. There's certainly a risk to manned spaceflight. And they're saying, well, we're going to have to play dodgeball for a while. But the problem is we couldn't play dodgeball to prevent this original collision. And now we're dealing with all of these tiny, tiny pieces of debris, you know, about the size of like a .22 bullet. That can't be tracked from the ground with radar systems. And anything that runs into that at basically 25,000 miles an hour, it's going to go right through. The kinetic energy that's carrying is just tremendous. There has been one known impact on the space shuttle by what is thought to have been a fleck of paint that came off of another piece of orbiting satellite equipment. And it created quite a noticeable crater in one of the windshields. Now, fortunately, the shuttle windshields are multiple layers, and they've got anti-spalling layers and everything, so there was no breach of the cabin atmosphere. But it does indicate that at those speeds, if you're crossing another orbit at right angles, the relative velocity is so incredible that even borderline microscopic amounts of debris are going to have a tremendous, tremendous impact. So the reason I wanted to bring this up, though, is we're getting reports from some places around the world that there are strange booming sounds being heard, and they're wondering if that's the reentry of the satellite debris. And the answer is no, because the satellite debris reentering the Earth's atmosphere is going to behave just like a shallow-angle meteorite. It's going to burn up way high in the atmosphere before, way above the clouds, very high up. You're not going to hear it. And anything that does survive to come down is already subsonic by the time it gets down to low level. So there are no sonic booms from any of this stuff. There are no confirmed reports yet of impacts on the ground from any of this debris. But, you know, keep your eyes out on the night sky, because there's probably going to be a light show, you know, over the next few months as some of this stuff starts to come down. Now, we're going to turn here to Flight 3407. There's a lot of discussion about it. And again, if you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Yesterday, a commuter aircraft, a Dash 8, crashed on approach to the Buffalo Airport. Flight 3407, and it carried a couple of notable individuals. There was a human rights worker, and the most notable individual, and the media is making a big deal of the fact she was on there, was Beverly Eckert. Beverly Eckert was one of the 9/11 widows. She was part of the group called the Jersey Women, I think that was called. And she was one of the people who was very instrumental in pushing for the 9/11 commission. And, of course, that commission's report, when it finally came out, did nothing to assuage public suspicions of a government cover-up, mostly because they didn't even mention World Trade Center 7, because nobody can come up with an explanation why a building that was hardly on fire all of a sudden collapses into its own footprint, especially given all the buildings both before and since that have burned right down to the steel frame without collapsing at all, including this one that's still smoldering out there in China. Now, recently, Beverly Eckert had turned her focus from 9/11 to the wider issue of government, truth, and accountability, and she was now focused on the torture issue, which there's a tremendous amount of international pressure for war crimes investigations. There's tremendous pressure inside the United States for a war crimes investigation. Gallup poll last week, 71% of Americans want a full investigation into just how it came to be that we were torturing people, some of them innocent, to death in what is supposed to be a country governed by the rules of law and the Bill of Rights. Obviously, for those members of the preceding administration and for those holdovers in the current administration who were involved in the torture scandal, the idea of this woman pursuing and possibly getting another investigatory commission should have been the source of much fear and upset. And she had met with Barack Obama only last week, and apparently had impressed him quite positively in this direction. So a lot of people are realizing that for those who were torturing during the Iraq War and are still torturing presumably somewhere out there in the black world, that this woman was a serious threat. And it's very convenient that she is now no longer around. So we are being told by the mainstream media, ICE, in the last news break that we were just listening to. Now they've sort of backed off and said ICE is one of the things being looked at. Okay. And the fact that the media was out there screaming ICE as the cause, even before the NTSB got there, was a red warning flag. Now, the idea of ICE, they're trying to say, oh, yes, they were talking about ICE here and ICE there. They've already published the transcripts of the radio communications from Flight 3407 to the air traffic control. The pilots of 3407 do not mention that they're in any trouble from icing. There is, on the tape, other aircraft talking about an area where some icing has occurred. But it's obvious from the transcript, it's not considered a serious problem. Now, before we go any further, we need to talk about the aircraft. It's called the Dash 8. I've flown in one myself. They're very reliable workhorse commuter airplanes. This one was almost brand new with an excellent safety record. No indications of any problems whatsoever. It has, because especially it works in Canada and in winter and so forth and so on, it has multiple de-icing systems. The propellers, it's a turboprop. The propellers are electrically heated so that ice will not form on them and then get flung off at high rates of speed, possibly damaging the fuselage. Heat from the engines is ducted through the frame to prevent freezing of critical components. And finally, and this is really kind of exotic, the Dash 8 includes what is called the Zodiac anti-icing system. These are flexible panels on the wings, on the control surfaces, that are puffed up with pneumatic pressure. They bulge just enough to break ice that is formed on there so it will fall off. So this is an airplane that is immune to the problem of icing. Okay, the music means we've got to take a break here. We're going to stop. 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room answering the phones. We'll be back continuing to talk about Flight 3407 after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the crash of Flight 3407 near Buffalo yesterday. And we're talking about this incredible push in the media to sell icing as the cause of the crash, and reasons to question whether that's really valid. The icing that was reported in the area was being treated as a very minor situation. There was no indication in the radio communication from 3407 itself that they had any problems whatsoever. In going through the transcript and listening to the tape of the radio, everything seems just perfectly fine and normal. One moment, the next moment, the plane is simply not there. Now, I want to play you a short section from the tape here when it's becoming apparent that something has gone wrong.
Delta 1998, look off your right side about 5 miles for a dash 8. Should be 2300. Do you see anything there?
Negative, Delta 1998. We're just in the bottoms and nothing on the TCAS.
Okay, that last word that he said, nothing on the TCAS. In the media, they've transcribed that as TKs or DCAST. But it's TCAS, T-C-A-S. It stands for Traffic Collision Avoidance System. This is a little box on commercial airliners that sends out pulses designed to trigger the radar transponders on other aircraft, and it just listens for those returns. And that way it knows there's another aircraft nearby to alert the pilot to basically watch out for potential mid-air collision. And so when the pilot of Delta is saying TCAS is not showing anything, it means that at that point, Flight 3407 is no longer responding on its radar transponder. We know from the flight controller that the last altitude return he got from the transponder was still at 2,300 feet, almost a half mile into the air, which is where it should have been at that point in the approach to the Buffalo airport. It was basically over the outer marker on that final approach. So we have an airplane that is very stable, high-wing design. It has multiple redundant de-icing equipment. The flight crew is saying there's nothing wrong, and then all of a sudden everything stops working. No more communication to the tower, no response from the radar transponder, and the plane goes straight down into a house. And witnesses on the ground said they heard the engines on the aircraft sputtering before the crash. So something had gone majorly wrong with the aircraft itself before it came down. So the NTSB has finally gotten hold of the flight recorders, and they're basically saying that everything seemed to be going normally. The aircraft had put its landing gear down. The flaps had gone down to 15 degrees, which is normal for an approach, this kind of aircraft into an airport. And then all of a sudden, the plane starts showing significant pitch and roll. Now, if ice had formed, affecting the lifting of the wings, you might see a pitch, but not a roll. If you've ever flown an airplane, and they will make you go through stall training, where you will deliberately stall the wing in order to teach you how to recover, and because that's something that every pilot has to go through. Sooner or later, especially when you're in bad weather and approaching an airport, you might stall, and they got to teach you how to recover from that. So they're basically, the flight recorder is saying that the airplane was basically tumbling, and it happened almost instantaneously. And I want to point out there are a lot of similarities to some other politically convenient plane crashes. Ron Brown's plane was on approach to its airport when it just fell out of the sky. John F. Kennedy Jr.'s airplane fell right out of the sky when it was on approach to the airport in Martha's Vineyard. The same thing with Paul Wellstone. Ron Brown was getting ready to testify against the Clintons in some corruption charges. John F. Kennedy Jr. was about to announce that he was going to run for the Senate seat, which was later won by Hillary Clinton when he was conveniently no longer around. Paul Wellstone, there was some controversy about him as well. Going back to the Clinton administration, a lot of plane crashes there. C. Victor Reiser, national finance co-chairman of the Clinton campaign, was killed in a plane crash. Herschel Friday, attorney and Clinton fundraiser, his plane just exploded in midair, cause unknown. Federal witness in investigations to drug money corruption in Chicago politics, Paul Olson, His plane exploded. The FBI actually came out and admitted that one was a bomb. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and let's see. Oh, here's a good, this was really funny. Steve Dixon, counsel to Mr. Hurd, and Stanley Hurd, both died in a plane crash outside Dulles Airport. They rented, they took off in Hurd's private plane. It developed problems. They managed to get it back to the airport. They rented a new plane. That plane caught on fire and crashed. I mean, somebody really wanted those people done. And, of course, Democratic Governor Mel Carnahan of Missouri, he died in a plane crash. It's just, you know, it's so bad, it's actually affecting the insurance premiums for air travel right now. So I'm not going to go out and say that we know for a fact what has happened yet. But I'm looking at the media push to convince everybody that it was ICE, which started even before the NTSB got to the crash site. And, frankly, I am suspicious about this. We know we have a government that lies to us all the time. They certainly lied to us about Saddam's nukes. And now we're finding out. This whole 2 weeks ago, we had this whole thing about this Iranian ship that was accused of smuggling arms to Hamas. It was all over the news. Oh, yes, there's weapons on board, and there's this and that. And we talked about it before. What they were calling material to build weapons with turned out to be ingots of raw steel, which you also used to make pipes and kitchenware and pots and stuff. And they were saying, oh, but this, we know this is intended for weapons. Well, Cyprus basically has searched the ship, and they have found no weapons at all. It was another puff-up, hype, propaganda job to try and sell us in a war in Iran, and yet another frame-up has collapsed. So, oh, my goodness, more and more stuff going on. Not too long ago, there was an attack on a synagogue in Venezuela where a group of masked people ran through, sprayed graffiti on the walls and broke some bric-a-brac and ran out. And this was getting world press all over the place. Anti-Semitism in Venezuela and with horrific things. At the same time, of course, Israel had just gotten done completely flattening six mosques in Gaza with bombs, and nobody felt that that was worth reporting. But spray paint and broken crockery in Venezuela was headline news all over the world. Well, the government of Venezuela finally made some arrests and found out that the people inside those masks carrying out the attack were police officers for the most part, including one who worked, you know, in his off hours, moonlighting, as a bodyguard for the rabbi of the synagogue. Another one of the ones arrested was a security guard who worked at the synagogue. And so basically this is turning out to be yet another hate crime hoax. And Hugo Chavez has gone public saying this was a hate crime hoax to make Venezuela look bad. And it's failed. It's completely fallen apart. The mainstream media isn't telling you this, but that's why you come to this show. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Tonight. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We were talking about hate crime hoaxes before we went to the break and the revelation that the recent attack on a synagogue in Venezuela, in Caracas, now appears to have been something similar, where the attackers are exposed as local police officers and one of the security guards from the synagogue itself. It was only a month or so ago that police chief Alois Manakil's claim that he was stabbed by neo-Nazis was exposed as a hoax, that the injury actually resulted from a domestic dispute, but hey, let's blame the neo-Nazis for it. Last year there was an 18-year-old woman in Germany faked a neo-Nazi attack by carving a swastika in her skin. 2004, French woman came up with a story about being robbed on a train by a knife-wielding gang that thought she was Jewish and put swastikas on her body. And then, we remember last October, there was a volunteer for John McCain's presidential campaign who tried to claim that a Barack Obama supporter had scratched a bee on her cheek. These things happen all the time. It's for attention. It's for politics. There's another story just recently, a Brazilian woman who said she miscarried twins after an attack by neo-Nazis in Zurich. That's also been exposed as a fake. She wasn't even pregnant. She didn't lose her kids. It was just a story. And again, there is this huge push, especially since the Gaza attack. You know, Israel wants to go back to that wonderful world where they're always the victims and the whole world hates them. And we've got to send our kids to fight in wars to protect Israel. We've got to send our money to Israel and weapons to Israel because, oh, they're such poor victims. And unfortunately, the slaughter in Gaza and the use of white phosphorus on civilians basically exposed to the world that Israel, they're not very nice people. And I'm pot calling the kettle black. Our own government isn't all that great either because we paid for it all. When you see that white phosphorus falling down on those school kids in Gaza, you paid for that. So, but remember, the terrorists only hate us because we're free. Anyway, let's see. We were talking about the economy first hour. I think probably we'll come back to it now for the benefit of our affiliates who join us for hour number two. The Congress has just finished passing the compromise bailout bill, Obama's bill, and it's on the way to the White House for a signature. It was passed in the Senate without a single GOP vote. It was passed in the House with only three GOP votes. It should be very obvious that the bailouts under Bush were patronage funds to enrich Republican cronies, and it looks like the bailout bill under Obama is patronage money to enrich Democratic cronies. And it's not just greed, it's political strategy, because while a particular party is in control of the government, they will try and make sure that members of their party become rich enough to become donors for the next election. It's like a giant kickback scheme if you think about it. And the idea is that if they can put all this money into the hands of Democratic-owned companies, that they'll be able to outspend the Republicans in future elections and hang on to power. It's all about grabbing power and hanging on to it. And the common good of the people, well, that's kind of like the lowest priority of all. Already, even before the ink is dry on the signature on the current bailout, they are already talking about another one yet to come. Ailing banks may require more aid to keep solvent. They closed two more late yesterday, by the way. Because of the continuing decline in real estate prices and the growing problem in commercial real estate prices, more and more banks are basically technically insolvent. And so they're already talking about another $1.5 trillion to pour onto the banks to prop them up again. And it is absolutely the wrong thing to do. It is robbing the poor to give to the rich. And these people running around doing the robbing, otherwise known as the Infernal Revenue Service. In the Robin Hood story, those are the guys who are catching the arrows, you know, from the guy in the green tights, from Errol Flynn. And I think that is it probably everybody's favorite Robin Hood movie is the one done by Errol Flynn for Warner Brothers, The Adventures of Robin Hood. It's sort of the classic archetype Robin Hood. I actually have a sword from that movie hanging on the wall of my my office here. Movie prop. It's made out of aluminum. It's all beat up. Kind of fun stuff. I'll grab it and take it to the door with me when the door-to-door salesman come by.
I say, yes, what do you want?
Never mind. It's cool. We're gone. Barack Obama's new energy secretary, Stephen Chu, is already out there pushing for a new carbon emissions tax to fight global warming. This is we come out of one of the coldest winters on record, and as the data is showing that the Earth has gone into a serious cooling trend. Now, we have been talking about this subject for months now. There is real science, and then there is science as fashion accessory. And global warming is one of those things that people will get on board because they want to feel like they're doing something to make the world better. But they don't dare talk about government corruption or government-sanctioned drug smuggling or the fact that we were lied into the war in Iraq, because then the government might come back and do nasty things to you. So a lot of people, celebrities especially, there are a few exceptions. Charlie Sheen, Rosie O'Donnell, people like that. Willie Nelson, people of courage. They'll talk about the real issues, about what's going on. But a lot of celebrities, they'll want to get involved with a charity or a cause that makes for good photo opportunities, but doesn't really carry the risk of any kind of a backlash. And a lot of them have leapt onto this global warming thing because they go out there and say, yes, I'm supporting saving the planet, and nobody's going to object too strongly to it, certainly from the government and the media side. But the reality is that we have repeatedly exposed time and again some of the very bad scientific methods, some of the intentional deception that has been used to sell this idea that the Earth is getting considerably warmer, that it's not supposed to, and that it's all the fault of humans who must be made to atone by paying a tax. And sure enough, U.S. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu is coming along saying we must pay a carbon emissions tax. Now, Europe has already done this. Europe has done this, and it made a lot of individuals very rich and has not done anything for the environment because the money gets taken and spent on other things, like trying to basically keep the government from going out of business. This is all about getting more money from you, convincing you that you must live with less so the government can have more. And it is a bottomless pit, certainly here in the United States. Even before the current financial crisis and all these bailouts, the U.S. government is so deep in debt, it can never pay its way out. All of the income tax paid by every American doesn't even cover the interest on the existing national debt. Since Vietnam, we have paid in taxes more than four times the entire national debt, but only in interest, so the debt remains the same. We are permanent debt slaves to the Federal Reserve, and that's the way they wanted it. We spend our lives in slavery to the owners of the Federal Reserve, which, by the way, contrary to what you're seeing in some recent mainstream media articles, the Federal Reserve is not part of the federal government. It's a privately owned bank. It is no more federal than Federal Express. They chose the name Federal to convince people that this was somehow an official organ of the U.S. government. It really is not. It's a privately owned bank, and it got control of American monetary policy in 1913, and our country's decline has proceeded from there. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back with the last segment of our show today. If you want to call in, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, we will be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show. We've got emails coming in. We've got callers waiting on the line, so we're going to be in a bit of a rush. First of all, a listener email. You already did the bailout bill. Why are you not mentioning the books and toys being banned for lead? Well, I am now. Yes, there are books and toys being banned for lead. Children's books prior to, I think it was 1985, are basically being taken out of circulation. And yeah, well, they should. Lead is highly toxic, and we need to get those out of, especially away from kids. All right, going to the phones, we've got Juan in Miami. Aloha, Juan. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
How are you, Michael? Good to hear from you again. Listen, regarding the stock market, and particularly the way it's been artificially propped up lately,
mm-hmm.
People have for a long time believed that this presidential plunge protection team is a myth or a conspiracy theory. Well, I mean, if anybody pays attention to exactly how the market trades, you'll realize not only is it not a myth, but it is a very active organization that is doing everything it can to keep the market from collapsing. Because I have recently sort of had to mandatorily shift my method of income, and I find myself now day trading in order to salvage my own investments that were being collapsed by my broker. And if you see the way the market gets salvaged on days that it should be completely collapsing, in the last 30 minutes of the day, suddenly the market will bounce back up to close at a level that is just below catastrophe.
Yeah, we have seen that many, many times. And, of course, any insiders who know when it's going to happen, they're in a position to make a huge amount of money off the whole thing.
Well, you know, no, go ahead.
Yeah, it's no secret there's a plunge protection team. They even got their pictures on Time magazine, I think, toward the end of the Clinton administration when everybody started saying, okay, yeah, they're really out there because John Crudell in New York had kind of blown the whistle on them. And everybody knows it's there. Nobody wants to talk about it in the corporate media. But, yeah, we know it's there. And we've seen the results. We had this one day last week in the last hour of trading, everything just shot up like a rocket. And it was,
yep,
like really obvious.
I know exactly the day you're talking about. And actually, an article came out in online magazine called GamingTheMarket.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's might be something you may want to dig up, or I'll try and maybe perhaps email a link to you. It's really interesting. It basically, it gives people an insight as how to play a plunge protection team salvage day.
Yeah, I would be very interested in seeing that, definitely. The games they're playing, they've got these huge put options, and they're crushing the shorts. And, in the meantime, they're in a position to put a lot of money in their own pockets by playing these games. What they're doing would be illegal for anybody else.
Oh, of course it is. But, ironically enough, it's like, once you get your head around the fact that they do exist and they are playing these games, you can actually, game them.
Okay, well, if you can make it work, I've got an extra $20 I can invest.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown.
All right, thanks an awful lot, and we're going to switch over to Thomas in Sweden. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hi. During the first hour, you briefly mentioned 93 and Flight 93 in connection with 3407. Can I go there for a few minutes?
Sure, for a few minutes. We're almost out of time today.
Okay. You remember the light plane flew in over the Capitol about 4 years ago, one May morning, and they emptied the Senate, and all the senators and all the congressmen ran out. I've never seen them move so fast, by the way.
Yes.
Okay. I was listening to the Voice of America at that time, and they had a reporter on the scene, and they asked Joe Lieberman, they said, well, Senator Lieberman, what do you think they're going to do about this? And Senator Lieberman says, oh, they're probably going to shoot it down like the one they did over Pennsylvania.
Whoa, he actually said that.
Yeah, and the next day they did not repeat that program like they normally do. And
yeah, I can understand why.
Yeah, I wrote to Senator Lieberman about it, and he says, oh, I only deal with people who live in Connecticut. So I wrote to him, what about the people in Baghdad?
Good for you. Very good for you.
Yeah.
Well,
the logo on the Voice of America, it says, a trusted source of news since 1942, not since 2005.
Voice of America, I mean, everybody knows that's a propaganda operation to propagandize the rest of the world about how wonderful things are in the United States. And but it is amazing. If you look at the news that's released inside the United States versus what gets out, it is so different. And one of the things that I got to do when you go outside the country is you'll watch CNN International and compare it to what's, you know, coming out on the CNN's domestic websites, and you realize it's quite a bit of difference in the stories. They're spinning things one way for the rest of the world and another way for us inside the country. Anyway, Thomas, thanks a lot for the phone call. We're going to let you go here because I've got one more comment I want to bring up on Flight 3407, and this relates to the NTSB, which is on the scene right now. And, folks, the bottom line is I don't trust the NTSB to be truthful about this plane crash, if in fact something nefarious has happened, any more than any other plane crashes. I mean, the Wellstone crash, they just officially conclude that's pilot error. And my guess is they're going to say the same thing here, pilot error, which is what you say when you don't want to talk about mechanical failure. John F. Kennedy Jr.'s airplane, pilot error. It's the stock thing. And the reason I don't trust the NTSB is because during the TWA 800 investigation, when you had hundreds of people, hundreds of eyewitnesses who saw a missile shoot that plane down, and the NTSB was right in the forefront of the cover-up, their official explanation for the eyewitness accounts is that everybody on Long Island was drunk when they thought they saw a missile hit the 747. And at the time, they said, well, we're going to deal with this thing about exploding fuel tanks with all of these new special fuel tank safety rules. And the airline manufacturers complained that it was a lot of trouble and a lot of expense, and the insiders knew it wasn't going to make the aircraft any safer because these safety rules for fuel tanks were addressing an issue that didn't really exist. Kerosene aviation fuel tanks don't spontaneously explode. They never have. And so, not surprisingly, this last week, the FAA is starting to rescind all those fuel tank safety rules that they put in after TWA 800, which is coming along just in time for Boeing 787 aircraft. That's starting to go into construction. And they don't want to have all this extra equipment on board that adds cost and adds weight and doesn't really make the plane any safer. And it's just one more indicator. And during the trial of James Sanders during TWA 800, the NTSB was caught in court, in a court of law. The NTSB was caught rigging their lab tests. And when the scientist who did the lab test pointed out that, yeah, this stuff has been dyed and changed to make it look like something that it isn't, they rewrote this scientist report in the final report that was released. So they were caught rigging lab tests and then altering the results of those tests to conform with the preconceived, you know, explanation that 747s just sort of spontaneously blow up on their own in the middle of the air. And so with that track record, the bottom line is that the NTSB has to join the ranks of those government agencies who cannot be trusted to tell the truth to the American people whose taxes pay their salaries. And this is one of the reasons why people are looking at the inconsistencies of Flight 3407 with a great deal of skepticism. We can't trust the government, especially in the aftermath of the lies about Saddam's nuclear weapons. The people don't trust the government. The government has lost the trust of the American people. And a government that cannot be trusted is a government that has basically really lost the ability to rule effectively. If there was a real, genuine emergency, the government would have a very hard time mobilizing the American people to a course of action, because the prudent reaction by the American people is, how do we know this is a real emergency? How do we know it's not another false flag attack? How do we know it's not another 9/11 or another claim about Saddam's nukes, or the claim that the Iranian ship was full of weapons, and now we find out that it wasn't? We can't trust the government. How do we know taxes are legal? We've got at least one judge in a court case that says it isn't. How do we know? The bottom line is we don't. The government is full of liars. Anyway, that's it for our Saturday show. We'll be back Monday at our usual time, 5 p.m. Central Time. with more news, your phone calls, and all kinds of stuff. So have a good weekend. Drive carefully. Enjoy your Valentine's Day. Not too late to get out there and get some flowers for your honey. And we'll be back Monday. Until then, aloha, America.